Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Michael Colgan as my special expert guest. Michael Colgan, PhD, CCN, FACN, is an internationally renowned research scientist, acknowledged as one of the world's most popular scientific experts in nutrition, exercise, and the inhibition of aging. From 1979 to 1998, Dr. Colgan was the director and president of the Colgan Institute. He now serves as the chairman of the board. Currently, Dr. Colgan is on the scientific advisory board for Isagenics International and continues to consult for other companies. Michael has a distinguished reputation for his expertise in sports nutrition. He has advised hundreds of athletes of all abilities and ages throughout the world and has written a plethora of excellent, groundbreaking books on topics related to sports nutrition, health, healthy aging, and fitness. Dr. Colgan's nutritional advice and scientific expertise are also utilized throughout the CSNA education program. Good morning, Michael, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, Corey. Good morning.
It's really good to hear you. 4 years has gone by. It's unbelievable, but I know that everyone will be excited to hear what you have to say, as they always are. How about giving us maybe a bit of a recap to let us know what you've been up to and some idea about some of the projects you're working on?
The main project I've been working on for 11 years now is a study of aging, and we've been running a human sample for 11 years. About 4 or 5 years ago, we started to get in results, because it takes a long time to measure things in human aging. You know, all the stuff that you see on the internet about be a year younger next year is nonsense. It takes a long time, but we have been successful now. And in year 11, we've got a pretty big grant, some millions of dollars, to continue until 2021. The results are very exciting. And actually, the results are one reason that I wrote the book that you're going to talk about, because most people do not understand why they get fatter as they age, even if they don't change their nutrition or their exercise. And one of the things I've pointed out is some of the principles of aging that we have elucidated over the last few years that make it obvious why that happens.
Now, this human study, can you give us an idea of what it's like? I know that you've always been very clear in your research and your books about studies that are short and sort of offside when it comes to really putting them together so that the results are more reliable. What makes this one more reliable?
Most people do not realize, and especially the internet makes it very difficult for people to understand, that it takes, just for the turnover of muscle cells in the body, takes 28 weeks. The turnover of most brain cells takes 56 weeks. So any program whatsoever of exercise or anything else that you undertake, unless you undertake it for 28 weeks in the case of muscle, or 56 weeks in the case of trying to reverse aging or something like that, then you may as well not waste your money. It doesn't matter how much money you throw at it. If you don't do it for long enough, you don't get the turnover of cells, and you don't get the new cells growing up in a different medium, different environment, and therefore you make no change in your body. It reverts back to what it was.
So the length of the study, like a 6 week or a 2 month study, directly correlates to the reliability of the results that you can sort of take
home?
Exactly.
In humans, because of their long life, we really need to do a 10-year study minimum if we want to say study aging. Now, if you want to say study how to improve your physique and your body, then you've got to say, okay, I'm going to make a 5-year plan, because it will not happen in less than 5 years.
Right on. Now, I just read your latest book, Dr. Colgan's Fat Loss Secrets, and of course, I really enjoyed it. It was awesome, spot on, as it always is, filled with a lot of great comments and principles and insights. So let's talk about some of the principles now that relate also to this study, as you mentioned. And the first thing that came to mind after reading what you stated in the introduction, because you've told me personally why you have never written a book on fat loss, weight management in the past, but now you have. So what changed your mind?
Well, it's really from the study of aging, because I have a lot of people contact me, and certainly when I'm on stage with Isagenix, I have hundreds and hundreds of questions afterwards, because there are a very large number of people in the audience, and the audience is up to 10,000. We have very large numbers of people in the audiences who follow all sorts of programs to lose body fat, and they're totally unsuccessful. I mean, totally unsuccessful. They can lose maybe 10 pounds, and then they gain back the 10 pounds in a year, and then they lose it again. And some people have been literally losing and gaining the same 10 and 20 pounds over 10 years, repeatedly. Not only is that bad for your body, but it's a complete failure of understanding what aging is about and what actually causes the body to change as it ages. You know, humanity evolved in concert with the diurnal rhythms of the light, and the retinas of our eyes translate light to a biological clock in the suprachiasmatic nucleus of the hypothalamus in the middle of the brain. And then that, the SCN, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, triggers thousands of physiological functions of hormones, nerves, muscles, organs, and brain 24 hours a day from birth to death. And as we age, that clock gets less and less efficient, primarily because of a decline of melatonin in the system. After about age 25, melatonin starts to decline, and by age 35, in almost everyone, you can measure the decline. And in almost everyone by age 35, you can measure the decline in their brain function, in their memory, in their brain speed, in a whole lot of factors. And that is despite going to the gym, doing all the exercise, having a good diet, not changing anything. And so one of the first things that we wanted to do in trying to reverse aging is to maintain the melatonin system. And that's why I developed the sleep spray that is the only effective melatonin that I know that's on the market, although a number of companies have copied it since I first developed it in 2005. But it's very successful in maintaining levels of melatonin. Now, there's many, many things that pertains to in terms of fat loss and aging. I started studying with Professor Russell Reiter at the Department of Structural Biology at the University of Texas. He is acknowledged as the world's leading expert on melatonin. And I want to just quote to you from his latest review, just to actually quote it so you'll know I'm not exaggerating. Experimental evidence demonstrates that melatonin is necessary for the proper synthesis, secretion, and action of insulin. And then it goes on further down. The reduction in melatonin production during aging induces insulin resistance, glucose intolerance, sleep disturbance, and metabolic circadian disorganization leading to obesity. I don't think it could be any clearer than that. And yet most people do not maintain their melatonin system. That's only one thing. It's only the weight loss is only one thing. We have discovered in our aging research that there is an even more important reason for maintaining melatonin, and that is that you get deeper and better sleep with melatonin. And why is that important? Because sleep is the only clearance mechanism the body has got. During the day, you build up enormous number of metabolites in the brain, especially the brain, and they cannot be cleared during the day because the cerebrospinal fluid does not flow during the day, only a tiny percentage. As soon as you go to sleep at night, cerebrospinal fluid enters your brain in volume and cleans up all the debris of the day. It's the only clearance system that the body has got. And it's not appreciated in medicine. It's starting to be. I mean, now they're starting to get people in emergency wards to wear earphones or muffs to block the necessary noise of a hospital, because they recognize that recovery from surgery, recovery from illnesses is much better if people can clear the debris, the metabolic debris, every night.
Now, hasn't that been compared, that clearance, to like a brain rad flush, you know, like how you flush your radiator in your car to clean
it
out?
Yeah, it's exactly the same as that. And if you miss it, even for a night, then it builds up a large amount of metabolic detritus in the brain. And one of the big reasons for people developing Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, the two biggest forms of neurodegeneration, is that the gradual buildup and the failure to clear the metabolites of normal daily activity.
Okay, so sleep is absolutely crucial. Now, what about somebody that falls asleep well and stays asleep and doesn't wake up and gets their 7.5 and 8 hours, and they're like my age at 60? Do they still need to take melatonin?
Yes. Even if you sleep well, one of the things you would notice in using the sleep spray is that you will get much more vivid dreams. Dreams occur during the deepest parts of sleep. And if you get more vivid dreams, it's an indication, and of course we've done some measurements on this, that you are getting deeper sleep. It's the depth of sleep that enables the body to clear best.
Okay, that's really good insight. And now what about the actual practical use? How much melatonin? That's a big question. People want to know.
That's a
one,
big question.
Three,
it
30.
Is. It varies differently with different people. I've talked about it with Russell Reiter quite a bit, and he uses about 15 milligrams a night. I think I use about 8 to 10, but that's much more than is advised in the usual advice on melatonin. And, of course, most melatonin pills that you buy in a health food store are useless. They're useless. They get destroyed by the gut and the first pass through the liver. You have to get the melatonin in through the mucous membranes of the mouth. That's the only way you're going to get enough into the brain. So that's why we developed the sleep spray, which you hold in the mouth.
And what about timing? When's the best time to take that?
Well, just before bed. Some people, it induces sleep very quickly, and I have had people say, I squirt in the melatonin, I hold it for a minute, then I clean my teeth. The last thing I do is sit on the toilet before bed, and I've actually fallen asleep and fallen on the floor. So it can be that quick with some people. And I've done that myself. I've actually fallen on the floor asleep from doing exactly that procedure. Only once, but it was enough to make me realize that I don't want to do things in that order again.
Right. Learn by living, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, there's been a lot of focus and energy and research in the last couple of years. I know it goes back before that, but it's been highlighted on this microbiome. And this is kind of a buzzword that people are now referring to, all of those critters inside of us. But you do bring attention to that in the
yes.
book on fat loss. So what is the relationship between the gut and the microbiome and losing or gaining body fat?
Oh, this is terrible for a lot of people who regularly take their yogurt with various lactic acidophilus, lactic fermentum, lactobacillus acidophilus especially, lactobacillus fermentum, lactobacillus ingluvivi, quite a number of the yogurts that are supposed to provide probiotics have these bacteria in them. Now, fortunately, most of the yogurts are not effective, and I explain that in the book, because essentially you've got trillions of bacteria down there, and they're always looking for food. And when you send down a few billion lactobacillus acidophilus, they just act as a meal. They're just eaten by the already entrenched members of your microbiome. Most people don't even know what their microbiome is. In fact, we are a very small part in the terms of number of the number of organisms that constitutes a human being. The largest part by far is our microbiome, which is trillions of individual organisms. It wasn't known until, two or three years ago, that some of the commonly used probiotics, especially Lactobacillus acidophilus, make people fat. They create what's called a fat microbiome. So if you eat more and more of them, you're likely to get fatter and fatter. Whereas Lactobacillus gasseri, Lactobacillus plantarum, and bifidobacteria make you leaner. So these are pretty interesting discoveries. And another thing that people don't really understand is that every single antibiotic you use, even antibiotics you put on a cut in the skin, which go into the bloodstream, devastate your microbiome. devastate. All these antibacterial soaps, all the antimicrobial hand sanitizer gels, they devastate your microbiome. All the sprays used on vegetables in open salad bars and the sprays for cleaning kitchen counters are destructive. It's a social madness that developed from the obsolete science of the 1970s. Fortunately, the FDA is about to ban some of them outright. In fact, some states already have banned them, the hand sanitizer sprays. What happens is, of course, they kill off the weaker bugs in your microbiome, but the strongest bugs survive to breed big time, and then their progeny become resistant to drugs. Consequently, United States hospitals, not so much in Canada, but United States hospitals are rife with deadly hospital infections created by the patients themselves, not by the hospitals, created by the patients who bring them in along with them. It's hard to tell people the truth because they don't want to hear it.
Ain't that the truth? Now, what about some of this Russian stuff, like kombucha, these European fermented foods, like the really, really good stuff, like the sauerkraut, or in the old days when women used to live on farms and can and make pickles and use fermented foods as a staple? Are those things good to eat for the microbiome?
I believe they are, yes. They provide... Fermented vegetables provide the prebiotics on which the bacteria grow. The prebiotics are all the fibers in vegetable foods, and they are the food that most of the microbiome uses. So, unfortunately, when you go to a typical American diet of PAP, you don't get them. I can't stress this enough, because like 50 trillion bugs in your gut, the weight, the actual weight of those with no water or anything else is heavier than your brain. And they have hundreds of times the genes that we do. And all their genes are active. And you don't want to do anything to annoy them. They're mostly bacteria, about 1,000 different species.
It's fascinating. It's like another universe inside of us, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yes. When you see it on the news, you see hospital infections called like Clostridium difficile, which... people know as, you know, vancomycin-resistant Clostridium difficile, and E. coli. They're often cited in the media as food poisoning. They never mention it, and they don't seem to realize that both of those bacteria are normal inhabitants of the healthy human biome, and they usually don't bother us. That's it. We breed them all ourselves.
Yeah. Well, about 40 years ago, one of the first lessons I learned from the naturopathic medicine was don't eat late at night. You know, so now they're giving it a fancy term and some research is coming out, time-restricted feeding. And you do bring attention to this in the book. So how important is that regarding weight management, the timing, and what effect does eating have on our circadian rhythm?
Right. Well, the circadian rhythm determines almost all of our physiological function, including when we should eat, what we should eat, times of eating, everything. It's pretty much common sense by evolution, without going into it in any detail. When your average Paleolithic person got up in the morning, they were starving hungry, so they went looking for food. That was the first thing they did, and they were pretty active. That means they got exercise, then they got food, and then they ate it. By evening, that was all over. So they didn't eat a lot late at night. They didn't usually have a lot. In fact, we had, even people who were on a very spare diet today, and I mean a spare diet, eats twice or three times as much as the average Paleolithic person whose genes still run around inside us. The exact same genes have not changed since the beginning of our agriculture. Takes approximately 50,000 years to make called the genomic gap, to make a sizable change in your genes. And we haven't had that much time to get used to eating a lot of food. So we really destroy ourselves by eating far too much, even people who apparently don't eat much.
What about those who struggle with the nighttime eating syndrome, with the cravings, watching television? That obviously is a factor. People tell me all the time, you know, how do you do it, Corey? I just can't control myself. What do you say to that?
I do consults for some of the trainers who have got new gyms. It's a very common problem. How do you get rid of the cravings? Well, you've got to change your body. And there's no 12-week program you can go and buy out there, but that's what people want. If you can't do it in 12 weeks, they're not interested. But you can't. You've got to change the cells. You've got to change the cells so that there is no longer a craving. Well, you and I know that it works, Corey. I mean, I used to be a chocoholic when I was younger. And I realized that this is not good. And I don't think can't remember last time I had a piece of chocolate. I don't like it anymore. It's too sweet. But that's because all my cells have changed. So I don't get cravings of any kind. And anyone can change their body so that it lives off its structure rather than off what you put in the gut. But most people today live off what they put in their gut. And if they don't have something in their gut, they feel a yearning for it.
I asked Dr. Kenneth Cooper, who you know and respect. I know that you do. You've mentioned him. I asked him the same question. He said, it's discipline. People lack discipline.
I don't think so, Corey. No. I know some pretty disciplined people in other areas of their lives who have trained their body to live off sugar in their gut. And if they don't have sugar in their gut, their blood sugar drops, and then they feel terrible. And as soon as they have something sugary, like, you know, a donut or a cookie or something, their blood sugar rises. And that trains their body, every single cell, to want that. But you can train it the other way. Takes a year, but it's worth it.
So you have to want to do that, though. If you don't want to do that, I mean, that's what I get from reading the book overall. It's just like, okay, you're responsible. You have to, you know, make some changes. But what about those? I mean, it's obvious. If you don't want to do the work and put the time and energy into learning, there's no hope for those people.
Not much, but what I usually say to them, I had a very, very wealthy couple just recently as a consult, and they said, we're doing this, we're following your book, and we're doing this diets and things, and they were up and down with it. You know, they would do everything nicely for 3 weeks, and then they'd go away somewhere and have luxurious food and whatever and a lot of drink, and then they'd start again. My biggest point to them was, do you want to see your grandchildren graduate from college? Because you are not going to live long enough. They're both overweight, by the way. You are not going to live long enough to do so unless you make now, today, make a 25-year plan for your life. I don't know whether they're going to do it, but that's their only hope.
Is that attached to the emotion of fear of a possible outcome? Or is that more about logic and a review of the data and the inevitability of an outcome based on the steps you take?
Well, there's always the fear. I mean, the fear of death is real. But I think the pure joy of seeing your grandchildren graduate from college, that's something to look forward to greatly. I've got a number of great-grandchildren now, and I'm very fortunate in being able to enjoy them and be in top health. I'm not perfect by any means. I'm not disciplined in the way that Ken Cooper may talk about, but most of the time, and I know you do too, stick to a reasonable amount of exercise and a good diet, and it pays off. It paid off.
Absolutely. I'm right on the same page with the grandkids. I got four. I love them to death, and I'm planning on seeing them reproduce and having relationships with their kids. You know, Spencer Copen at the last Superhuman Summit, he said in an interview I just did with him, how long are you going to live? And I said, well, I have to live at least long enough for first contact, which in 2063 is when the Vulcans land on the Earth in Star Trek and change everything and, you know, resolve all of this madness that you talk about in humanity, because we finally get some insight about what the heck is going on. Michael, I just love talking to you. It's so wonderful to get your insight. One more question, because this was the $20 million question that you answered beautifully. I love it. It's just so obvious and yet so far from the mindset of where most people are thinking. Where does fat go when we lose it?
Oh, gosh. I'm sure that a lot of people actually found this out in high school. But when we asked, I was very surprised that a big study published in the British Medical Journal asked 50 family doctors, 50 dietitians, and 50 personal trainers, where does the fat go? 144 of these 150 health professionals got it dead wrong. Not a single one of the physicians and not a single one of the personal trainers knew where the fat goes. And so we started asking people, and we got so many funny answers. The usual one was that it comes out in your feces and urine, which is why daily regularity is so important. And another one was fat's converted to energy and heat and simply disappears. I mean, both of those are totally wrong. For instance, the second one, like all matter in the universe, you and your body are subject to the laws of physics. So disappearing fat that actually disappears would violate the laws of conservation of mass. It can't. So it's right in any college textbook. If I leave out all the biochemistry, it's pretty simple. To lose 10 pounds of body fat, you have to intake approximately 14 pounds of extra oxygen. The oxygen then oxidizes the fat that you've persuaded into your bloodstream by exercise to produce about the same amount of carbon dioxide, which you exhale, plus about 8 pounds of water. And that's it. The fat is breathed out. Your fat is breathed out. As carbon dioxide and water.
When Tracy heard that, when she read that in your book, she says, the first thing she said is, fat people are causing climate change and global warming.
That's true. Yes. Yes. Of course,
they're the cause of it.
You know, the more you breathe out, what the weight of the fat you actually get rid of as carbon dioxide is the weight of each fat molecule's 55 carbon atoms plus 4 oxygen atoms. And it works out to be most of the fat that you lose. So the main avenue of fat loss is your lungs. And successful, sustained fat control for life only occurs by increasing your breath, which, of course, increases your carbon footprint.
Yes. And, of course, you've got a brilliant Colgan Power breathing program I read about.
Oh,
you actually
right.
teach people
yeah.
how to breathe.
Yes. Yeah, most people breathe very shallow, especially, I have to say, women, because they tend to hold the stomach in a lot, and men get away with wearing looser clothes, but a lot of people breathe very shallow, and they never fill their lungs. One reason
right.
that exercise is good.
Yeah, of course, of course. And that VO2 max, which is something you can measure, is something that you can use
right.
as a reference as you age. That's one of the biomarkers in testing biological age. Is that not true?
Yes. Yes. Oh, gosh. I give some examples of athletes that we've worked with who have a very high VO2 max, 65, and half of them were given breath training for 6 weeks to increase the depth of their breath, and half were given placebo training of the same duration. And then the breath trained group improved their performance over a period of about 6 weeks, way more than the controls. One way to improve your athletic performance is to breathe better.
Right on. Now, two websites for everyone out there listening, drmichaelcolgan.com and colganinstitute.com. These are where you need to go to get more insight. And I believe the book you can order online from the Colgan Institute, the new book that you've just produced on fat loss. Is that not true, Michael?
Yeah, we've got digital versions of it for every sort of device. It's been selling up a storm. I don't have much contact with it, but they tell me it's selling up a storm.
Yes, and also I noticed on one of the sites that there are courses that you now have available. Are they online? Is this something that people can sign up for online?
Right, yes. They're with some of my people run these courses, yeah.
Great. Excellent.
And they're pretty successful in that one of the things I do is I give free consultations to people who are on the courses once every 2 weeks. And some of them now have been on these courses. They're 28-week courses, but they've been on them. So they've re-signed about three or four times. And some of these are top trainers, which makes me pleased.
Wonderful. Okay, well, our time is gone. Again, another remarkable intercession with the Master. Thanks so much, Michael. I saw that you just turned 77. You're looking great. Great to see you on the circuit. You're leading the way, pioneering as per usual. You truly are. It's funny, I'm just watching a TV series on Einstein. It's called Genius, and I keep thinking about you, the genius of sports nutrition. And thanks so much for everything that you've done in my life and Tracy's and all of our students. I've introduced you to all of them through the course material, and they always look forward to your books and writing and seminars, etc. So with that in mind, how about a final parting comment, which you always give a good insight to end our session today?
Well, remember that you breathe at rest about 15 times a minute. That's 900 breaths every hour, 20,000 breaths every day. So breathing is the critical factor that you have to start with if you want to extend your life.
Dr. Michael Colgan is an internationally renowned research scientist, acknowledged as one of the world's most popular scientific experts in nutrition, exercise, and the inhibition of aging. Thanks, Michael, very much.
It's a pleasure. I'll see you again soon.
Okay, thank you. Look forward to that. Take care now.
Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com.
Representing lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik, with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.